Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Guess what, listeners? We've got a fucking crazy episode for you today. Buckle up. But before you buckle up, all right, or after, you can buckle up now, whenever.
Live dangerously, baby.
Whatever. We got to shout out our newest patrons, starting with a new champion for actors' rights. We've got Aista E joining us to fight the good fight. And we're so happy to have you here, Aista. Thank you so much for joining.
Hell yeah. We are so happy to have you. We also...
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I kind of have something like stuck in my throat, but I'm just going to power on through it.
Okay. Live dangerously.
Yeah, that's my motto today. We also have so many new members of Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. Welcome to this intimate circle of close, close friends headed up by Tony Collette herself. We have Aggie Kuwata, Liv Sangor, Erica J, Michelle, Terry Presley, Molly Dew, Deandra Andrews, Crystal, Caitlin McLeod, Alicia Glazer, and Jay Batsby. Welcome to the group.
Well, welcome to Living Dangerously. And if you want to live dangerously and also support this group of people right here that you're listening to, it's us. You can join the Patreon, become a patron at patreon.com/TSW podcast. We are entering a new year, if you can believe it. And so we are once again rethinking those Bennies and
those Bennies, baby.
And we are going to be bringing you all kinds of fun bonus content in 2022. And if you want to be a part of that, you know what to do. Patreon.com/TSDW podcast. We'd love to see you there. And until then, we'll see you right here. It's time to buckle up if you haven't already, because this episode is coming to you.
Last call for buckle
up. Last call for buckle up. Buckle it up. You know, live dangerously, but also responsibly. And it starts right now.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy.
And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Everyone, welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I'm too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and I watch them so that you don't have to. And today's movie, you're really not going to want to.
Oh.
Really cool.
But before we get into that, how are we all doing?
Just great.
Just great.
How are we doing now in this moment before the retelling of today's movie?
Yes. I'm good. I somehow recently have quite a bit going on, actually, but I'm not going to talk about any of that. What I'm going to talk about is something I watched. Can you believe it?
Mm. Oh, I love it. I love to hear it.
Last night, mm-hmm. I watched Licorice Pizza, which is not out yet wide, but by the time this episode comes out, it will be out soon.
Yep.
But it's in select theaters currently. So if you find yourself at a theater that you could see it in, I do recommend it. It is Paul Thomas Anderson's latest movie. And I was so delighted the entire time I watched it. It was one of those movies. I won't say too much because I know Sammy wants to see it, but it's just like, it's just fun to watch. You're just having a good time. It's like, that's, and it felt like the people who made it were having a good time. I'm all about recently movies where they're like, hey, we don't have to create like drama and catastrophe or for this to be a good movie and enjoyable and for this still be like an arc and still be tension. It's just like, we're not going to put, there were so many moments where like a bad thing could have happened. And instead it was like, no. And I'm just, give me more of those, please. Joel and I watched Magic Mike XXL the other night because he watched it and was like, oh my God, it's so great. You're going to love it. And so he watched it again with me the next night. And it's the same deal. It's just people having a good time, but it is fun to watch. If you got recommendations of other movies like that, everyone, I would love to hear them.
When is a Magic Mike 3 happening? I love the Magic Mike movies. They're
great, and I would love a third.
Great. They're so great.
I would love a third.
And you're absolutely right. They're just like a good time.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Licorice Pizza, which everyone should see, I think. I will say there are two things about it that I don't feel good about. One moment that I think, or a choice that I think will be clear to everyone when they see it. What it is that I was like, this was unnecessary, and I don't think that it helped anything or was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, a casting choice, which unfortunately, he was very good in it. He's a very good actor.
Sean Penn. Yeah.
And I don't want him to be in things because he is
I feel the same.
Physically abusive to women. And it just made me really upset to watch him in this movie. And again, he was good in it. I could say that. You could be talented and compelling and also a bad person who shouldn't get things in life. And I'm upset that he was in it because otherwise I would have enjoyed those moments a lot more. But
yeah,
beyond that, it was really just very, very delightful. Very, very delightful. I thought Alana Haim was great. I thought Cooper Hoffman was so good. And it was really cool to see him in a PTA movie because,
He from? I've never heard his name before. I don't know who he is.
He is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
Oh, that makes sense that he would be in a PTA film.
Yeah.
He loves Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Loved Philip Seymour Hoffman. And yeah, he's 18. He's Philip Seymour Hoffman's 18-year-old son. And this is his first thing. And he's the star. And he's so good and so charming and just like, yeah, I turned to Joel like halfway through the movie and I just said, I'm having the best time. Oh. Like I was just having a good time. Bradley Cooper is so fucking funny in it. God, Bradley Cooper is so funny in it.
This is a glowing review.
I just had fun.
Yeah, she just had fun.
And I know that's about like what we're not doing here wholeheartedly. we are about to do the opposite.
Yeah, you need it to counteract this.
Exactly. You need a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's up with you guys?
I don't really have much to talk about, except that you brought up Paul Thomas Anderson, and I just want to talk about how curious I am about that family. Paul Thomas Anderson, Maya Rudolph, they have four children together. I don't think they're married. I think they're just in a long-term relationship. Mm-hmm. They have four kids.
Maybe common law by now, legally.
Like, what is it like to have Paul Thomas Anderson and Maya Rudolph as your parents?
Interesting, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, they both are so cool, but also I think having famous parents in general is a bit of a double-edged sword. Is that the right use of that?
I think so.
Yeah, it's very good and very bad. Yeah. It's very good and very bad.
Okay,
and and they're also so incredibly talented in completely different ways. So mm-hmm. it's a lot to live up to, like kind of no matter what you're choosing to do, unless you take a hard left turn and you're like an engineer or something.
Right. It's so interesting because on the one hand, look, everyone's lot in life is unique and, no matter what, you have challenges. But it is so funny because I think that, too. I'm like, God, it must be really hard to have them as your parents. And on the other hand, it must be so fucking easy to be born into a super rich, successful family.
How fucking cool.
Right.
Like, it would be really hard in a lot of ways. But can you imagine if you just, had access to any life you wanted and that you could try for anything you wanted because you were financially supported no matter what. Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be really wild.
But it would also be, big shoes to fill, but also you could step into some fucking big shoes if you wanted. Like some people are like, I wish, give me the shoes. I can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Give me the shoes.
I read somewhere that the biggest secret to success among millennials, or the most common factor in successful millennials is successful parents, rich parents.
Nepotism.
Duh. Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
Duh.
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 Because Because then you're just, doors are open for you. Yeah, it's not even necessarily about money. Like, it is about money, but it, even more than money, it's about just knowing people and knowing, like, who to call when you have a problem and, like, that kind of thing.
And lack of fear, or at least, like, the ability to take risks. Like, when you are, we really diverted. And again, no, I'm not even saying that these people aren't talented or don't deserve it. Those can be true, too. Like, I thought Cooper Hoffman was fucking great in this movie and a perfect choice. But so many people, it's like, you, if you just need to, like, make money and earn a living and, like, stay afloat, you don't get to go after your dreams.
Right.
You don't get to take risks because that's a luxury.
Oh, boy. Well, this is a fruitful conversation right here. The only other quick thing, I also want to give a little recommendation, which is that I've been reading these books by Elizabeth Jane Howard. She was an author in mid 20th century. She's like a genius, I think. But the books are, all they are is like a domestic story of women during World War II and after World War II. And it's about kind of like the female perspective during the war when they're not involved in the war at all. They're just like stuck at home and they like don't have anything to do. And it's,
and they're like no men around, right?
Yeah, there are no men around. And a lot of it is from the perspective of children. So it starts with like the perspective of, you know, the main characters are really Louise, Polly, and Clary, and they're like 11, 12, and 13 when the books start. And it takes place over the course of like maybe 15 years and 10 to 15 years. And it's just her ability to talk about like everyday life during that time is so fascinating. There's so much detail that is just like, it's so different than the way we live now. I honestly don't even really know how to tell you how invested I am in their lives at this point. There are five books. I'm like almost done with the fourth book. When I'm done with the series, like my world is going to fall apart.
Wow. What is it called, the series?
So it's the Cazalet series. And the first, I honestly can't even remember what the first book is called, but it's about the Cazalets. That's the name of the family.
Okay.
And the author's Elizabeth Jane Howard. And I just fucking love them, you guys.
I'm into it. I'm into it. Well, I have a recommendation as well. It's a preemptive recommendation because it's a TV series that I've only watched the first episode of.
Ooh.
But this is a recommendation for my fellow vessel heads out there.
Ooh.
It's called The North Water. It's on.
Oh, I've heard about this.
It's on AMC Plus. I watched it like through Amazon. You can get 2 months of AMC Plus for only 99 cents. So I did that. And it's starring Colin Farrell and Jack O'Connell. And Colin Farrell's character is so like intense in it. So it's,
I feel like he's in everything lately and I'm so happy about
it. Wait, Sammy, okay. I heard in this TV show there is a very intense killing of a seal.
Yes, very intense. And it is Colin Farrell doing the killing.
Whoa.
He clubs a seal to death and apparently it's long extended.
Not just one seal, Henley. Many, many seals. they are whalers. They are hunters. So it is, that is his job, is to go kill seals. And so it reminds me a lot of The Terror just because it's, you know, old boats.
Oh, the vessel heads, their ears just perked.
Ooh,
right up.
Old boats.
I do. I really do love it. And so I loved The Terror so much, but I will say that anytime there's like a wide shot, you can tell it's a little computer generated. They're not really in the Arctic, you know, and it makes a lot of sense. They're filming a TV show. And in this one, I was like, wait, this looks really real. And I looked it up. This is the furthest north any production has ever filmed. They are literally in the Arctic filming. And Yeah, because I was like, this looks too good. Like, how does this...
Colin wanted the real deal.
And Colin Farrell refused to wear gloves because he said his character wouldn't. And
I love a crazy actor. God, I love a crazy actor.
He could have lost fingers. He could have lost some fingers.
Yeah, your character maybe wouldn't, but are these the stakes that it's worth to you?
Crazy. Crazy
to me.
God, I love it.
He takes his craft seriously. You got to respect that.
You got to respect it.
Who knows if the show will end up being good, but I was just really thrilled by the first episode. It's a little boring at first, but then it gets...
But then he starts clubbing seals and you're
feels
like
crazy. Yeah. Feels like it's got a lot of the right ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's interesting.
AMC Plus, check it out. And that leads me into this week's movie, which is also on AMC Plus. So it's part of why I chose it. Cause I was like, look at that. Just did my same little subscription I just bought. Also, I wanted to get us in the holiday spirit this week. And so I did watch Rare Exports and it was not scary at all. It was a nice little movie. I do recommend it. I had fun, but I was like, there's literally nothing scary in this movie at all. And so I went completely the other direction and chose High Tension. Also called Haute Tension or Switchblade Romance. Has a couple couple different names. Came out in 2013. It is rated NC-17, worth mentioning.
No, thank you.
Directed by Alexander Aya, who also directed Crawl, which was a lost episode of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Crawl wasn't that scary, so...
No, but he's a good, like... good at building like suspense and tension. Like,
tension. That's okay. Right. There we go.
And it was written by Alexander Aya and Gregory Levasseur, starring Cécile de France, Mei Wen, and Philippe Nehon. It is a French film, as you can tell by my accent.
Yes.
And it's on AMC Plus. You guys have obviously heard about this movie. Based on your reactions, what do you know about it?
I don't know anything about it other than that I'll really hate it, and I'm not entirely sure why. I just feel like it's one of the ones that's been listed as like, ooh, high ten. Like, I think I only from reputation do I know anything about it. I don't know what happens in it. I don't know what it's about. Yep.
The only thing I know is people have asked that we do it, and so we've included it. I think in some of our like. Polls we've done right. Sometimes. So I've just seen like the cover of it before.
Yep.
But I don't know anything. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. I don't like the response when it gets brought up. People go like, ooh, you know, so that's all I know about
also,
it.
Also, Sammy, you saying that we're not going to like it. Like, yes, really, anytime you say that, you're right.
Yeah. You are right. Yeah. You tend to know.
You've never been wrong.
This is one I had wanted to see for a long time. This was my first time watching it. And I don't know, you know, I had heard of it equated with torture porn in that camp. It's because it's French. It's actually, they have a different phrase for torture porn called the new French extremity.
Okay. They had to make it their own.
So yeah, I think that's part of why I hadn't watched it for so long. It's like hard to know when the mood is right to watch torture porn.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it said about me. Last night I literally was in the mood. I was like, that sounds kind of fun right now for me.
No, I think sometimes you want it. Sometimes you want like an extreme feeling.
I wanted some extreme feelings last night and I got them.
Cool. All right. So it lived up to its definition. It is torture porn.
We could talk about it a bit at the end. It's actually not as gnarly as I was bracing myself for.
Okie dokies.
I can't believe the things you've seen.
I know, the things that your eyes have seen.
It really is funny watching a movie like this and being like, oh, it wasn't so bad. It is a little disturbing to have that reaction.
Well, you know what, though? I really think that a lot of it is like time and place. You know, you could have been in a different emotional state a different day and it could have affected you differently.
True.
I think.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's true. But it has a 41% on Rotten Tomatoes, 42% on Metacritic, but still a 6.8 on IMDb.
Holding strong in that six range on IMDb.
Six range. We don't stray from it often. It had a budget of $2.5 million and made $6.8 million. And then just some other films that were part of the new French Extremity. I was kind of reading a bit about it. Other examples include Martyrs, Irreversible, Frontiers, and Inside, not to be confused with Bo Burnham's Inside. Just kept making me laugh imagining that in this little subgenre.
Ooh, I've heard terrible things about Martyrs, and that makes me nervous.
I kind of want to watch them. I know it's weird, but I'm interested. And one day I will. Probably not soon. I feel like you got to space out your torture porn.
Yeah.
You can't watch it back to back. Excuse me, your new French Extremity. Mm. Some other trivia is the camera used during the car attack scene got so much fake blood on it.
Car attack?
Yeah, car attack. Yeah, it's a car attack.
Is this Titan?
Titan. It got so the camera got so much fake blood on it that when it was being used on another film later, fake blood oozed from it while it was pulling focus on a shot. I thought that was pretty funny. Imagining being that focus puller and being like, oh my God,
look, it was bleeding.
Kind of fun. I was a focus puller once, you guys, and it was the most stressed. I think I'd ever been. Because it's like you are the one who fucks up the shot.
It's crazy. I
guess anyone can fuck up the shot, but.
And learning that there's like another person holding the thing, and it's like, what? That is crazy.
Yeah, it was a very stressful little job. Second assistant camera, never again.
Movie magic, man. Movie magic.
The film is set in the south of France, but it was shot entirely in Romania. And this made me laugh. It was influenced by the Dean Kuntz novel Intensity. Some people were like mad and said it just ripped off this novel. And despite the similarities, Kuntz later elected not to pursue a plagiarism case as he found the film so puerile, so disgusting, and so intellectually bankrupt that he didn't want the association with it that would inevitably come if he pursued an action against the filmmaker. I thought that was pretty funny. It's like, I don't even want to acknowledge this with suing
it. You didn't copyright me or plagiarize me because I don't want fucking shit to do with this.
I was going to say, I didn't know Dean Kuntz wrote like torture porn-esque things, but that must be it. It must be just the actual plot is similar, but because I've never read anything by Dean Kuntz. I just don't think he's someone who's... I can't speak to him, so I don't know.
I just thought that was funny and a nice little unintentional promo for this movie. Because people always love that shit in horror. It's like, ooh, he thought it was so depraved that he didn't even want to sue them.
Yeah, that's funny.
And that's all I got. So shall we watch the trailer?
Let's watch
it. I guess.
Hard pass. Is there a small child in this?
Not for long. Oh, God!
my God.
That's not funny. Fluorescent lighting in there for you, Henley. That little shot of the fluorescent light flicker.
There was a little animated tiny drumming bear.
I do not remember that in the movie, but it's very funny in the trailer. I also love that song, Sonic Youth.
Yeah, that was a great song choice.
Okay.
Yeah, feels not okay to me. Not a fan. I don't know what to say about it, except that I just don't feel good about this. I just don't, you know, I'm just not
sure.
I just don't feel good about it.
Your gestures right now are very Donald Trump. I just don't feel good about
it. Oh my God. My mom tells me to dress like Mary Poppins. You tell me I look like Donald Trump. I don't know who I am anymore. No, that's what
I said. I said, Henley, you look like Donald Trump.
Now I'm imagining Donald Trump dressed like Mary Poppins.
Perfect.
And somebody meme it.
I, you know, had been excited about this movie for a while. I like a female protagonist kicking ass. That's always fun.
Looks like she wrapped some barbed wire around a stick.
Yeah, she sure did. Pretty gnarly, like Negan in The Walking Dead.
Seems like an effective weapon choice, but yowza.
Yowza.
We're going to have to just see how we feel about it all at the end, because I can't say much about my feelings at this time.
We're just going to have to see.
You know what that means is that Sammy liked it.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
We're just going to have to see. Seems like a lot of different kinds of blades happening.
Yeah, not good for
a lot of different sharp instruments.
Okay, so we...
Okay.
Fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay. Okay, we start with a woman in a hospital room kind of mumbling to herself saying, I won't let anyone come between us ever again. We don't get a good look at who this person is. It's just an unsettling little scene. And then we go into our main titles, which are... you know, regular titles cut with a woman running through the woods, looking really injured and bloodied and barefoot. And one of the titles I just had to write down, it says edited by Baxter. And I've just never seen a single name editor, and it really delighted me. And as an editor, I just
power move.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot to think about with how I want my IMDb page to look.
I think you should start going by Baxter.
I think Baxter, or at least Baxter the Second, Baxter Junior,
Baxter Two,
Baxter Junior.
Oh, God.
Or just Smart. What if you just went by Smart?
Be interesting. It would probably attract some traffic on my IMDb page. I feel like people would be like, what? And they would have to look me up.
Mm-hmm.
That's Baxter's move. And it worked. Smart. Who are we talking about right now? How many conversations have been had about Baxter? I'm sure countless.
So many on so many podcasts.
So many. You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-day blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc.
They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-day blinds, buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/tooscary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/tooscary. One last time, that's the number 3daybl.com/tooscary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
So then we see two women, Marie and Alex, driving in a car. And I was a little thrown off in the beginning here because the version I watched kept going back and forth between dubbing and subtitles, which I have never seen any movie do. So, Weird. Yeah, sometimes they're speaking in not so greatly dubbed English. And sometimes they'll be speaking French with subtitles. I guess you guys know what alternating between the two means, but it just really was confusing. They are on their way to Alex's parents' house, and we see a shot at Alex's parents' house of her little brother playing in the yard dressed like a cowboy. He's probably about 8, proving my previous theory that all kids are 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the mom says, like, oh, get ready, your sister's coming. Clearly, these two women are, you know, this is the house they're going to. And just outside this house, or like, I don't know, half a mile away, we see a very creepy truck parked in, like, off the road in, like, a cornfield-ish. Yeah, there's corn in this movie, too.
What? This movie has everything.
I love corn. Emily is scared of corn. So we're having different reactions here, but reactions nonetheless.
And yeah, to be clear, I am scared of corn.
Corn the food.
The presents.
No.
The kernels. Everything.
So stupid.
I don't know where we all are today, but I feel like we're all in a similar state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is, but we're going to ride it out.
We see in the window of this truck a man with like a baseball cap on. You can't really see his face, moaning. Oh. And we see like a woman's head giving him a blowjob. And we see it for a bit, and then he lifts the head up and throws it out of window, and it is a decapitated head.
Okay.
And it's right in the beginning of the movie, and I think it's the most upsetting part of the movie. I was like instantly like, my jaw was on the floor for 2 minutes after that. I was just so shocked and upset.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, what the fuck?
I'll say that's like one of the worst things that happened. So it does set the tone, but it's also like worse than most of the things. Well, you guys, I guess, will be the judge. Maybe maybe it's just what upset me the most.
It just shocked you because it was the first thing.
Ew. Yeah. And it's daytime at this point. And it's like right near, it's just after a scene where we've seen like a little boy playing in a field in a cowboy costume. So yeah, it was very effective. And that just really shocked me. Emily has put her sweater over her head. She's trying to hide.
That is so awful.
It is. It is.
Ew. I can't stop thinking about it.
It was very shocking and gross. Yuck. Yuck, am I right?
I can't wait to hear more. I can't wait to hear more.
We're fucking 30 seconds into this movie. Ew.
So then we go back to Marie and Alex, and now it's nighttime and they're getting close. They're driving past the cornfields now, the same cornfields. And Alex says, "Stop the car. I think I saw someone in the cornfields." And Marie stops, and Alex just jumps out and runs into the cornfields in the dark, which is so ill-advised. Like, what? If you saw someone, the last thing you would want to do would be to get out of the car and like run right in there.
No, thank you. No. Run away. Run in the opposite direction.
Just keep driving. You're already driving. Just drive right past. Who fucking cares if there's someone in the cornfield?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you nosy bitch.
Let them tend to their corn business.
Yeah. They're not, they didn't invite you.
And Marie gets scared and jumps out after her and chases her through the cornfield. And the two of them are getting lost. They don't have flashlights or anything. It's dark. And then Marie hears the car starting up and driving away, panics, runs, is able to follow the noise and run back to the road and sees the car driving away, yells after it. And Alex laughs and stops and is like, haha, gotcha. Very funny joke. Everybody's laughing and having a good time.
I love it when people do that.
And then they get back in the car and they drive just a little further to Alex's house, family home.
I was going to really go on a tangent that maybe we should just talk about another time, but I'm just curious. Have you guys ever had, like, I'm sure you have because you grew up as women in the world, like a mean friend, like a friend who's like your friend, but their whole deal is like mean, being mean.
Yes.
Like, that's what that makes me think of. It's just like, hey, I don't want that. But we all grew up having like a friend who's like, no, they're my friend. They just make me feel like shit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's like, no. Like, if I had a friend who did that, I'd be like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, what?
Because there's so much in, like, little teenage brains that are just wanting to impress other people. And I feel like that's that's how my mean friends got away with it, is because they were, I guess, more popular than me. And I was just like, I gotta prove myself worthy. I guess there's a lot to unpack there, but
there's a lot to unpack there. Usually mean friends are deeply insecure and need to assert power to feel valid.
Yeah.
But hey, if you're listening and you have a mean friend, they're not your friend. Don't be their friend.
Yeah. There's no need for it.
There's no need. Friends should be nice
to
you.
There's lots of nice friends out there, and you deserve them.
Anyway, all right. So far, I'm not loving this friendship is all I'm trying to say.
Sure. That's fair. They arrive at the house. We meet Alex's family, her mom, her dad, and her little brother. And they're clearly excited to see her. It's been a while. The women are college aged, and I think they're about to start a new year of college, so they'll be away for a while. So the family's excited to see her. And she gets Marie settled in her room. The house is three stories, and the third story is just the guest room. And so Marie is on the third story. And it's clear also that at this point that Marie is our protagonist, because we recognize her as the woman who is running through the woods in the titles. She has like short cropped blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And it's just in the way that it's filmed where we get that she's who we're meant to be identifying with. And as Alex is getting her settled in her room, she says, "You want me to turn on the radiator?" Marie says, "No, I'll turn it on when I get cold. Don't worry about it." And Alex says, "I'm going to go put my little brother to bed. I'll like come check in on you in a second." And she puts her little brother to bed, and Marie gets like puts her stuff down in the room, unpacks a little bit, and then goes out to smoke a cigarette. And as she's smoking a cigarette, she looks up at one of the windows, and we see Alex taking a shower, and Marie really watches. So we get the impression that Marie has feelings for Alex, but from their conversations, we see that it's not, you know, returned. Alex doesn't feel that way. But there's just this little moment of like longing, Marie looking at Alex longingly.
Can you see her like whole naked body?
You see her boobs.
Poor window placement for a shower.
It is. I was thinking that as well. I don't think I've ever showered in a shower. where it's a big window too. Like there, I've showered in showers where there's a little window in the shower.
Yeah, sometimes you need to, you know, ventilation. You could open that window up.
Yeah.
Or if they're usually like frosted, you know. Mm-hmm.
There was kind of a big window in my LA apartment shower bathroom. I don't know whether you guys ever noticed that, but sometimes I would shower with the window wide open and just be like, hope my neighbors don't walk by.
I definitely am not sure if people from the street can see. I just assume people can't see in my windows. I don't know why, but I walk around naked in
you
this
can't.
Zone.
No, Emily, you couldn't. I don't think from where your apartment is.
I'm not going to change my behavior either way, but I've definitely had a thought of like, I wonder how many people who live around me and see me naked. I guess I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's not in the shower.
Yeah. It is funny in like a city that there would be a big window in your shower, because this is at least very rural. There's nothing around them. They are in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Still, interesting window placement. That's all I'm saying. Am I just trying to delay you ever having to tell us?
Yeah. Let me tell you something else.
Now let's talk about windows.
Marie then goes back up to her room and throws on some headphones or a little Walkman, listens to a song, and starts masturbating, which, how many times have you guys ever gotten to a friend's house and just immediately started masturbating? Friend's parents' house, excuse me. I was, again, like, very shocked by this moment. I was like, what?
It's so relatable. I get it.
That's a huge choice.
Yeah.
Especially with headphones on in a room that I'm assuming, like, doesn't lock.
Yeah. Right. The headphones thing is crazy. Like, you don't know when someone's going to come up to the room and ask if you need anything. You're a guest that has just arrived. Like, the likelihood is high that a parent could come and say, hey, do you have enough towels up here? Are you getting settled? Huge move to just start masturbating. But that's what she does. And as she does, it is intercut with that same creepy truck that we saw earlier, slowly pulling up to the house. And as it does, we're kind of cutting to each of the rooms, seeing the little brother sleeping, the mom sleeping, the dad kind of getting ready for bed, and Alex getting ready for bed as the car is pulling up. And then the car gets there. We see this big man get out of the car and come and knock on the door, rings the doorbell just at that moment of climax for the masturbating.
for the masturbating. Perfect timing. Love it.
And that's what she can hear that over her headphones. And so she takes the headphones off and is like, what the hell? Someone's ringing the doorbell. It's nighttime. And the dad gets out of bed, goes down, and goes to the door, opens the door. We see Marie get up and look out of the window of her room, and she can see the front door from there. She can kind of, at an odd angle, can see the man at the door, and sees that as the dad opens the door and says hello, the man stabs him, brings down a knife on him. The dad starts screaming, falls into the house. Marie is terrified, kind of freezes and doesn't know what to do. And we see downstairs that the man kind of pushes his way in, and the dad is trying to climb up the stairs. And
oh God.
But he's injured and he can't move very quickly. And the man kind of stands on him.
No.
And then puts his foot on the back of the dad's head and like stomps it through the banister, the railing. So it doesn't like stomp his head, but it just pushes, it's like forces it through the railing. So now his head is stuck in between the bars of the staircase. And then the man walks down the stairs and goes and finds a big heavy dresser and just thrusts it along the side of the staircase and decapitates the dad that
way. Holy shit.
And at that moment, we see the mom hear a commotion and come out and see this happening, or see the aftermath of this rather. And Marie at this point has opened her door and is kind of peeking out, trying to just not knowing what the fuck to do and trying to see what's happening here, what's happening. She can only hear now the mom screaming. And so she just closes her door and she starts packing, which at first I was like, why is she packing? And then I was like, oh my God, she's so smart. And she starts remaking the bed and she goes into the bathroom and she wipes out the sink so that it's not wet. And she makes it look like nobody's in this room. She like shoves all her shit under the bed and we see her eye the shower like she's going to hide in there.
Oh, smart. Really smart.
Wow, that's really fucking smart. I would be trying to climb out that window. I know it's the third story, but I'd be like, okay, I saw him come in. Yeah. He now needs to make his way through the house. I tried to, as quietly as possible, make my way out this window and out of this house.
I think that would be a good move. But still, this is impressive to make it seem as if no one is in this room. And we hear his footsteps coming up the stairs and he opens the door to this guest room. And he, first thing he does is hold his hand to that radiator and feels that it's cold. And I thought that was very cool too. And like,
yeah,
how fucking scary that if she had turned it on, he would have known there's no way to cool that down quickly. So I thought that was a fun little detail.
Yeah.
And he looks, it does look like nobody's there. He does go into the bathroom, puts his finger along the sink, and it's dry.
He's also like really thinking this through.
Yep. And he looks at the shower, walks toward it and rips back the shower curtain, and she's not in there. And
okay, great.
Then he walks back into the bedroom and pulls up part of the mattress. It's like a pretty thin mattress. So he just basically pulls up a corner of it. Nobody's underneath there. Puts it down, starts to walk out. And then the camera lowers and we see she is under the bed and has like pulled her feet up. So she's like in a little ball in the area under the bed that he wouldn't have been able to see based on the part that he pulled up.
Mm.
And she is terrified, has her hand pressed against her mouth, trying not to even breathe. Like, she is just trembling, trying to not make any sound. Like, he's so close that I think if she was even breathing, he would hear it.
Oh, God.
So she's holding her breath. And he walks out. He leaves. And she finally is able to breathe, lets out her breath. And then we see the man go into Alex's room. We see also that Alex is sleeping with earplugs, which is why she hasn't woken to all the screaming that's happened so far. And the man takes out his little switchblade. It's more like a straight razor. I guess that's a switchblade, but he takes out the razor and he's like stroking Alex's face with it.
Oh, great.
And she wakes up and he just looks at her and goes, shh, very creepy. Don't like that.
No, 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 no.
There is a phone in Marie's room that is not plugged in and she sees a little plug behind a wardrobe. The wardrobe's really heavy. She starts trying to slide it and eventually is able to slide it. But the plug she saw is like not a phone plug. It's like a, I don't know, just a regular plug. And so she's like, fuck, that's not going to work. Can't call from there. And she tiptoes down stairs to the mom's room. And I don't remember how she knows that this is safe. But at this point, the man is in Alex's room. And so Marie is able to get past and to the parents' room, again, just looking for a phone. Like, she's just searching for a phone anywhere. The phone in the mom's room or in the parents' room is also not connected, not getting a dial tone.
The fuck?
And as she is fucking with it and trying to get it to work, She hears the footsteps coming towards that room. She goes and hides in the closet of the parents' room.
If I'm her, I'm never leaving the room that he already checked.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Wouldn't you stay until he's gone?
I mean,
you know,
I guess it's
gone.
Good of her to want to try to call for help, but I truly think I'm like, I ride this out in this room.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
he thinks he's nobody's yeah. in.
I mean, I know that my stress response is freeze. And
yeah.
so, yeah,
yeah me too.
I think I just know that about, like, I think I physically probably couldn't do anything but stay in that room. But yeah, I mean, impressive that she is making moves. And so she hides in this closet, and it's one of those closets with like the little slat doors so she can see out a bit. And as she is looking out, she sees the mom run in, and she's bloodied, like she has been stabbed, but she's not dead yet. And she runs, and she seems to look right at Marie. And I think she's close enough that maybe she does see her, but she doesn't say anything. And she also goes for the phone, sees that it's not working. The man comes in, grabs her from behind, and slits her throat. And it's a pretty gnarly slitting of the throat. I feel like I've seen lots of throats being slit in movies, and this one was somehow different.
No, that's already bad enough. It's bad enough. It doesn't need to be worse.
I think it's because he's pulling really hard on her head. And so her skin like tears as he's slitting her throat.
Emily, this is not what Emily wants to hear. These are not the details Emily wants.
I don't like these adjectives.
No.
And we see Marie just again trying not to make a sound, hand pressed over her mouth, tears falling out of her eyes, watching this, still making eye contact with the mom as she is dying. And then the mom drops to the floor and goes out of sight because Marie is, she can't move, so she can't like look down. And we just hear sawing through flesh. And blood is just spraying on that closet door.
So this guy needs to take heads off. That's his kind of whole deal.
That's what I thought. And then...
No!
He, I think, hears the little boy making a noise or something.
Oh, I forgot about the little boy.
I didn't forget about the little boy.
And so he leaves the room, I think, for that. And then at that moment, Marie comes out of the closet and drops down at the mom's side. And her head is still attached in... the shot, and I was like, what was he sawing? And then in the next shot, we see her hand just across the room, just a sawed off hand on the other side of the room. It's never focused, it's not a point, they don't draw your attention to it, but I was just like, how interesting that he just was sawing off her hands.
Throw up.
Then
I want to tap out for the kid part.
The kid part isn't too bad.
Okay.
But so Marie goes into Alex's room now and finds Alex completely. She's chained up with like metal chains around her wrists and her ankles. So Marie is pulling at them. It's, you know, useless. And, Alex also has a gag in her mouth that's like a piece of like rubber that is also chained at the back and really tight. And Alex is screaming and screaming and screaming and freaking out. And Marie's trying to calm her down, like, it's okay, like, I'm going to get him. I'm going to get us out of here. And we see through the window the little boy running into the cornfield. And again, Alex is just fucking freaking out. And Marie looks out the window and we just hear a gunshot. And then the little boy is not screaming anymore. So we don't see it.
Okay. Well, at least it's a gunshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way better.
That's better. Yeah.
Marie asks Alex, where is a phone? Where is a working phone in your house? And Alex cannot respond. She is gagged and can't say anything, but Marie decides she's going to go down to the first floor to look for a phone so she can call for help. And after, and because the man is like outside at this moment, she sees him, she's like able to get down there and hide. And as he comes back in, he goes straight back up to the second floor for Alex. So, right. So he okay. doesn't see Marie, and Marie is downstairs and finds the phone, tries it, still dead, and sees that he has cut the like main phone line. So there's no calling for help here.
And now is when I leave. You drive for help. Alex is probably fucked. Sorry. That sucks. But you simply must get out of there.
You know where he is.
You know he's distracted. You fucking get the fuck out of
there. But remember, she loves Alex.
I think she's got to get over that.
It's a doomed relationship. It's not going to work out. Get over it, Marie.
Marie, get the fuck over it.
The man comes in, grabs Alex, tosses her over his shoulder, and starts carrying her out to his truck. Throws her in the back of the truck. Marie is watching this. Marie grabs a big old kitchen butcher knife thing and is slinking around. It's very stressful. All this is super stressful, but it's a stressful little scene where he comes back in the house. She's able to slip out of the house through another door. There's a lot of that kind of like passing each other secretly, evading him seeing her. And he comes back in and goes to a photo frame on top of the fireplace of Alex, breaks the glass, and uses his nasty little switchblade to cut out her face, like cut out just a photo of her face. And he's just kind of looking at it, probably like breathing, you know, because the killers always like to breathe loudly.
Yeah, they love to breathe, and they love to do things too slowly.
Yeah. So he's obviously preoccupied with staring nastily at this photo of Alex. And Marie uses this moment to go to the back of the truck and is trying to calm down. Alex is saying like, okay, where are you? Like, I'm going to get him. I've got this knife. And she hears him coming, and she's in the back of the truck too. And so she basically holds the knife out like she's ready to plunge it down into him right at the back of the truck. And as he gets to the back of the truck, he just slides the door closed without looking in. And so he doesn't even see her. The way that the angle is, he just slid the back of the truck closed. It's like a metal grate. It's like a milk truck looking thing. And just locks it with a padlock. And so now they're both locked in there, and he starts driving away.
Cool.
And we see he sticks that photo of her head on his dashboard, where there are many photos of women's heads.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And they're driving. Alex is screaming, making a lot of noise. Maria's like trying to whisper, like, you gotta be quiet. You're gonna like give us away. Like, just like pretend it's just you here. I gotta, you know, he's got to not know I'm here.
Yeah, if I were here alone, I'd be screaming.
Yeah, that's true. And they get to a gas station, and he starts filling up the tank of gas. Marie somehow is able to get out of the truck, which I just must have looked away at this moment. But let's say there's a little window or something that he wasn't worried about Alex getting out of, because she's bound, that Marie is able to get out of. And while he's on the other side of the truck filling up, she runs into the store and looks right at the clerk, panicked. The clerk immediately can see something is wrong, says, what's wrong? She says, call the police. The second she says that, the man opens the door. She has to like run and hide behind a shelf. And the clerk just starts trying to play it cool with this guy. He's like very quickly aware that, okay, this guy's the danger. I have to like act like I don't know anything. The man is fucking with the clerk. He's like, it's like he clearly
he kind of knows.
He clearly already kind of knows, because he like has blood on his hands and he's not hiding it. He's just like resting his hands on the counter, and the clerk sees blood on his hands and tries to reach for a gun under the counter. But then the guy like grabs his hand and is like, can you get me a bottle of alcohol or like a bottle of Jim Beam or something? And the guy's like, yeah, yeah, sure. Let me do that for you. Grabs the keys for the liquor cabinet, walks over to it, and he can kind of see from the corner of his eye Marie hidden behind a shelf, and he winks at her, trying to give her a signal like, it's okay, like it's going to be okay. And as he does that, the man slams an axe into his back and kills him. And he slams the axe into his chest. The man falls over forwards onto it, and the man again steps on him, like pressing the axe like into him. And the man clearly knows like something's up. He's like, he then says to the clerk's dead body, what were you looking like? What did you see? Who were you looking at? And he's looking around. And it's again a scene of her trying to, as he walks by a shelf, her hide behind another shelf, like the Jurassic Park scene thing, where she's just like hiding from him. And she's eventually able to slip into, there's like a downstairs area with bathrooms, a men and a women's restroom. And they're like big restrooms that I don't think any gas station in the middle of nowhere has, where it's like 8 stalls.
Yeah, no.
But she hides in the last stall, and we see the man come down and one by one open each of the stalls. We see her holding her breath, and he gets to the last stall, hits it open. It's empty, and we see that he is in the women's bathroom and she is in the men's. And so he then goes into the men's bathroom, but just goes to pee in there and doesn't check those stalls.
A woman wouldn't be smart enough to think to hide in the men's bathroom.
So
she's going to go in the appropriate bathroom for her gender.
Yeah. It's a situation where you never cross those lines.
And
that'd be nasty.
And so he is satisfied that he's searched the whole gas station. He changes the sign to close, turn the lights off so nobody goes in there, and gets in the car and drives off. And Marie does not get back to the truck in time, obviously, and is now in the gas station, but it does have a working phone. She is able to call the police. She says, a man, I was with my friend's family. He killed their whole family. He has her in his truck. The cop is saying, what gas station are you at? She's fumbling through papers and can't find. She's like, I don't know. Like, I was in a truck. I couldn't see. I don't know where I am. Isn't that like your job? Can't you come find me? There can't be that many trucks on the road. Like, you need to send someone right now. And the cop is being a little rude to her and is like, ma'am, you need to calm down. Like, calm down.
Okay.
And she gets frustrated and screams at him. And she says, if I blow the place up, will you be able to find it? And slams the phone down and grabs the clerk's keys and runs out to his car and takes his car and goes after the truck herself.
No. Don't do that.
It's okay. Not a great idea.
It's fine. She's doing it. You know what?
She already did it.
Let her do what she's going to do.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. She follows him down. There's nobody else on the road except for these two cars. He turns off down a abandoned dirt road. And she turns off her headlights and follows him. It's like, he's gonna see you.
Yeah, they don't make you invisible.
Yeah. So it's now in these woods. It's dark.
Oh, my God. She's like, kill me, too. Kill me, too. I also want to be killed. It's not fair that Alex is the only one.
And he's turning down roads. And she kind of loses him for a second. And can't figure out where he went. Then, of course, in her rear view mirror, his lights are right behind her, and he slams into her and drives her off the road. This is the car attack. which actually I think I looked away at this point too, not because I was scared, but I was just momentarily distracted. But after this car crash, she is like covered in blood. So this is must have been where the blood got on that camera. But she's able to crawl out of it before he gets to her. There's blood pouring from her head, from her arm. She has to do like a tourniquet situation in her arm. Her whole left arm is just like red. And she runs into the woods. And there's some sort of like greenhouses in the woods, basically plastic sheeting put up with like plants inside, but a bunch of them.
Okay.
And so she can just see the man's flashlight in the plastic as he's trying to find her. And she's crawling around through each one, evading him, wrapping up her arm, and this is where she finds a broken barbed wire fence, is able to pull one of the little wood planks from it and twists it so she just wraps the end fully in barbed wire. Real gnarly weapon, but probably a pretty effective one. And now that she has this weapon, she starts turning to try to find him. She's like ready for this confrontation now. And so she starts slowly moving towards the flashlight, and it's behind a piece of plastic, and she then pulls the piece of plastic back, and the flashlight is hanging on a rope, and he has hung it. So it seems like
it's moving. Yeah.
And then from behind her, he pulls a plastic sheeting over her face, starts strangling her, and she drops her weapon and falls to the ground, and he smothers her for a bit, not killing her, but she's like on the brink of consciousness. Close. And he straddles her. She falls down and he straddles her, and he starts again stroking her face with that nasty switchblade. And he says, Alex turns you on, doesn't she? She turns me on too.
Jesus fucking Christ.
And we see Marie, her fingers reaching around in the grass around her, and she finds a big old fucking rock and smacks it into his head really hard. And he freezes and falls off of her. His head is now pouring blood. And then she grabs her barbed wire weapon, and she just goes to fucking town. And it's really gnarly.
Oh my God.
It does show the aftermath of it. And his face looks really gnarly because it's not like a normal stabbing. It's like little pokes, like very deep pokes. So he's just got like holes all over his head.
Just little pokes.
Big pokes, I should say.
With like dirty, gross metal. Mm-hmm. Like,
ugh. And he's not quite dead yet, but he is on the floor gasping his final breaths. And she now straddles him, and she's like huffing and puffing over his body. And then he reaches up and grabs her throat and starts strangling her. He has fallen back into where the plastic sheeting was, so she's able to pull plastic sheeting over his head. So they're basically strangling each other to see who will die first. And nice. Marie wins, and he dies, and she lets out this big animalistic scream. And then we see police arriving at the gas station and finding the clerk's dead body. And they're like, okay, this is it. This is where the call came from. Like, call, we've got a homicide. We need to get, backup out here. And they go into the room where the security footage is, and they play it back, and we see Marie killing the clerk.
Oh! Wait a minute. Why is this, like, familiar to me? I think that this movie was somehow spoiled for me. I don't know. You telling me, you saying this for some reason is really ringing a bell.
Wait, keep going.
Okay, so then it cuts back to the woods, and it's like dawn now, and Marie opens up the back of the truck, finds Alex, and is comforting her, and is like, Alex, it's done. I did it. I killed him. Like, it's just, it can just be you and me forever now. Alex is, of course, still very much freaking out, and Marie's like, what? Like, it's over. I told you it's over. And when Marie left the truck, she left the knife with Alex, being like, if I don't make it back, like, here's your knife. Here's a knife, like, protect yourself. And so we see Marie undo Alex's chains, and immediately Alex pulls the knife on Marie and is like, get the fuck away from me. Don't touch me. You killed my fucking family. Marie is seemingly like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, like, I didn't do that. Like, that man did that. I killed him. And he's gone now, and no one's, I'm never going to let anybody hurt you ever again. Alex obviously buys none of this and slashes her in the face and then stabs her in the stomach and runs. And as we see that she's like left the knife in Marie, and as Marie pulls the knife out, we see the shot of her, and it's the man again. So she's like gone back into the man form.
Oh my God. Wait, I don't understand. Was she like, did she still decapitate? Was it still her in the very beginning? That I don't understand.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
Keep going.
So Alex runs to finds the main road, and a car is driving by, and she runs out in front of it, flags it down, and the car has to swerve off the road and like hits a tree, like not badly, but enough to potentially fuck up the car. Alex gets in the backseat, is like, drive, 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 go, go, go. We see Marie, or the man rather. This is all like played as the man now. And he pulls out a cement saw from the truck, which is like even gnarlier than a chainsaw. It's like fucking huge, and just starts running after her with this cement saw. We see him appearing through the woods. And the car, the man driving the car that Alex is in, can't start it. It won't start. It's fucked up. It's hit something. And so we just see the man run. He climbs on top of the car, and he just brings that cement saw down through the windshield, and blood sprays everywhere as he just fucking saws this driver apart.
Oh fuck.
And no. Alex is screaming. She is in, shall we say, the splash zone of this. So she is now drenched in blood. And I don't know exactly. She like tries to climb out of the window, but the cement saw is like flying everywhere. And so she like throws herself out of this car in a way that fucks her up. And now we see that a huge piece of glass is in her Achilles tendon.
No.
And she has to pull it out, and it looks really gnarly. But she has somehow, in like crawling out of the car and as the man was distracted killing the driver, found like a tire iron, but she can't run. Her foot's fucked up. Her Achilles is all fucked up. And so she is just crawling backwards. Eventually the man turns on her, and he comes after her, and he says, you don't even love me, do you?
Oh my God.
And Alex in this moment decides to change course here and says, yes, I do. I love you so much.
It's the right call.
It is. Yeah. And then we see the man turn back to Marie, and she drops the cement saw. This is all she's ever wanted to hear. She drops down next to Alex, holds her face between her hands. Alex is crying, saying, yes, I love you. I love you. I love you. They have a horrible, horrible kiss. You absolutely hate to see Murray just going in for this kiss. Like, oh, I love you too. But in that moment, Alex takes that tire iron and just stabs it right through her shoulder. But it's enough to get her off of it, get her off of her and like get her away. And it just cuts straight to, we see Marie's like out of it at this point. She's like not understanding what's happening, I guess. And she just starts kind of rocking to herself and saying, I'll never let anyone come between us ever again. I'll never let anyone come between us ever again. And at this moment, we do get flashbacks of the whole evening. And yes, it was her doing all of it. It shows her decapitating the dad, killing the mom, and shooting the brother. And
holy shit. That's a good twist.
I really didn't see it coming.
So
was it her then too with the decapitated head at the very beginning?
Yeah, that's what I'm confused by.
So let me just say the final little scene here and then we can talk about all of it because I have some thoughts. But so it ends with Marie in a psychiatric hospital rocking on a table saying, I'll never let anyone come between us, which is the scene that it opened with. And now we understand the context of it. And we see Alex watching her from behind a one-way mirror or two-way mirror, depending on how you look at it.
We'll never know.
Depending on your stance. Mm-hmm. And someone says, like, yeah, she can't see you. But then just at that moment, Marie turns and looks right at Alex and like has a huge smile on her face and like reaches for her. Like she's so happy she can see her. And that's the end of the movie. So, yeah. Okay.
Yikes.
So I do think that a lot of it is just excusable by it being a completely unreliable narrator because a lot of the stuff is not possible. So I think we have to just assume a lot of this happened in her head and it was her own like internal battle with this.
Okay.
You mean she didn't actually kill?
She did, but like she couldn't have been in the back of the truck and the front of the truck. Like there are scenes that are not like physically possible. None of the car chase could have happened. She can't be driving two cars. So like that kind of stuff, I think we have to just assume is her own like narrative that she's building in her head, which is interesting. I like an unreliable narrator story, but it.
And the mom like looking at her while she's being killed.
Right.
Like, she's in two places at once.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. One big problem that I have with it is that it's just like the only gay character is like being driven into a murderous rage from like unrequited love or like repressed sexuality, which I don't know is their like intentional message, but it's really hard not to like see that. As part of it.
That is,
I think they were probably just going for like, what's the biggest twist we can have? And like, what's the most unexpected thing? But yeah, I think an unfortunate side effect of that is like, it is a little like, has an undercurrent of homophobia in it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but the movie is so fucking nuts. It's almost like.
Yeah, there's a lot to.
It's just so crazy. I mean,
ooh-wee.
It's so crazy. So yeah, I guess if you do that, then you just live the rest of your days in a mental hospital and you are visited by the person whose family.
Yeah, I would not be visiting.
I don't know.
I would just sign not. I don't think I would want to do it.
I probably wouldn't.
She's like, I visited her on the holidays.
That's true. And it's obviously like so soon afterwards. I'm going to visit like 15 years later for like one piece of closure after I've done like so much intensive therapy, but probably not even then.
Probably not. Wow-wee.
I don't know why, but the second you said that, I don't know I don't know whether someone
like a deja vu of it.
I feel like someone like maybe spoiled it for me on Instagram or something when we were doing one of those polls. Like maybe someone like DM'd. Like, oh,
this movie has the craziest twist. Something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
I didn't even know there was a twist, so I was shocked.
I didn't see it coming at all until you said it, and then I was like, "Wait, I've heard this before." I mean, it's definitely like the twist kind of makes it interesting.
I think so. I think it's like it's effectively different from other things, and I like a lot of the elements that it had. You guys know I love home invasion movies, and so I was really into the beginning of it as well, and except for the very gross part that we don't like, but it also it's visually similar to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is another one of my favorites. And so I did like it. I liked it. I don't think it's perfect, but I had a good time. And do you guys see kind of what I mean? That it like wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
Honestly, yeah.
I think when I think of torture porn, I think it gets much worse than this.
Yeah.
It could have been drawn out. All the this deaths feels a little could have been more drawn out.
Like a gnarlier slasher to me, more so than like a full-on torture porn.
Yeah, because they're not fully like, they're not actually like being tortured necessarily. You know, their deaths are pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
Yeah, it's not like being drawn. He like kills them one by one.
Aside from maybe Alex, who is drawn out, but he's not torturing her.
But she's not being tortured. Yeah,
she's just being, I'm sure maybe would have been tortured eventually. Or I don't know. But
yeah.
Ugh, terrifying.
It's also just fun to like have your final girl be like unexpectedly your villain.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's really fun. That's a real surprise.
I like that.
It was still gross though.
Hey, we did it. We never have to do it again.
We never have to.
And as a matter of fact, we shouldn't do it again.
It'd be weird if we did.
No, we probably shouldn't do it again. It would be weird. It would be weird if we did it again. Let's do it again. And this time, Emily, you'll act like you've heard the ending before. Okay. And I'll act like I haven't.
Perfect. Okay. I like that.
Totally different enough that it'll be a fresh episode.
Yeah, I think that's good.
No good voices. Except your French accent.
From all of us here.
A classic.
Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Oh, it's so good.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Become a patron at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast for bonus episodes, trailer reactions, maybe some video episodes, all sorts of stuff over there for you. So head on over if you are interested. And if not, we will just see you right here next week with a regular episode. We cannot wait. We love you so much. Bye.